First of all, I want to congratulate all the young people that are with us today to receive the Eucharist for the first time. It's a really very important day in your life. And what I'd like to do is talk to you about what this means, this First Communion means, and talk to you about it from a perspective of a little bit of an edge. Because today, if you listen to the gospel, the story that Jesus told, you're dealing with somebody in the master who didn't feel sorry for the guy that just had one talent. And so I think it's important that we take a realistic view of what being in communion with Jesus really means. Now, let me start it off this way. Why the reading we had today was here on this day. The Catholic Church does not run on the calendar, the regular yearly calendar. Okay? Of course, the regular yearly calendar starts in January 1 and ends December 31st. But the Catholic Church doesn't run on that calendar. Our calendar starts the first Sunday of Advent. And Advent is the preparation season to come to Christmas. And so you can always tell when Advent is about to start. And the reason is you just look at Christmas Day. Okay, even if it falls on a Sunday, which this year it doesn't. But look at Christmas Day and then count four Sundays backwards. And one, two, three, four. And when you get to four backwards, that is the first Sunday of Advent. And so, if you do the calculation this year, next Sunday is the final Sunday of the church year. And the Sunday after that is the first Sunday of Advent. We start preparing for Christmas. Now, next Sunday is a big feast. It's kind of like the end of the year. It's the December 31st of the Catholic Church. And what we do is we celebrate on that day, we celebrate what's called the Feast of Christ the King, the final Sunday of the year. Now, on the Sundays that are getting ready to come to the end of the year, the Catholic Church that chooses the readings that we use, because I don't choose them, they're chosen by the Catholic Church. I go by what they tell us to do, and this is worldwide. The same readings are being read all over the world in the Catholic churches. Please excuse me, my allergies are in full bloom. So these readings, the last Sunday, the Sundays right before Christ the King, are what we call judgment readings. And the reason they're judgment readings is because we're coming to the end of the liturgical year, and the church is saying, let's think about the end of the world and the end of time and judgment. So this story is a story about the end of the world. Now, it's told in a parable. Now, the parable is a story. But it's a story that is meant to have you learn from a point, and the point being made. Now, look at the story. Let's just look at the story. There's this guy that's going to be gone for a long time, say several years. And he has money, and he doesn't want to take it with him. And so he pulls three servants, and he gives the three servants, evidently, he has 8 talents. Now, when you hear the word talent, that's, by the way, where we get the word talent from in English. But in the ancient world, a talent was roughly equal to $1 million today. And so when you hear he had 8 talents, he basically had $8 million. And so what he does is he says, okay, I've got these 3 servants, and I'm going, and the key here is I'm going to entrust. Now, when you are entrusted with something, it's not yours. You have to do what the person who entrusted you with that, with whatever you think they would want. And so, for example, if you entrust your kids to somebody, you're expecting that person to feed them. You're expecting that person to take care of them. Or when you go to a financial advisor and you entrust your money, you're expecting that they're not just going to sit with it, that they're going to do something to make your money grow. Well, that's what this guy's doing. And so he has 3 servants. And with those 3 servants, he gives to the one he trusts the most, he gives 5. 5 talents, basically $5 million. And he gives it to him and says, go, go. Then he comes to the second guy, and the second guy's pretty good, but he gives him only $2 million. And then comes the guy, well, he wants to take a chance on him, but okay, he'll give him a chance. So he gives him $1 million. And then he goes away. Now, when he comes back, he says, okay, it's time. I want to see what you did. And so, of course, the first guy comes and says, hey, you gave me 5. I invested. I made another 5. The second guy comes and he says, hey, you gave me 2. I made another 2. Great. Then comes the last guy. Now, I want you to notice this last guy. Because the last guy, I mean, we could feel sorry for him, right? You could feel sorry. You could say, oh, man, he just got 1. He just got $1 million. The other guy got 5. The other guy got 2. And this dude just got $1 million. And so he was given a chance. But what does he do? He buries it. Now, imagine if your financial advisor would do that. He knew what the master expected him to do. But he was scared. Poor little thing. He was so afraid. And so what did he do? He hides the money. And he forgets about it until the master comes out. Ah, gotta go get the money. And then he gives it. And then he goes to the master and says, you gave me 1, and here it is back. I didn't lose it. Now I want you to notice, the guy did nothing wrong. I want you to notice that. He did not lose a single penny. He did nothing wrong. So the question is, why is the master so angry? He didn't do anything wrong. And you know why the master's angry? Because the guy was lazy. He was lazy. He didn't do anything right. He didn't do anything right. You know what I always imagine? I always imagine a guy who goes out for a football team. And he says to the coach, Coach, I promise you, I will never get a penalty. Now, I don't know how to throw. I don't know how to run the ball. But I guarantee you, I will never get a penalty. What kind of a football player is that? He's lousy. Why? Because in football, you're not supposed to not just do anything wrong. You're supposed to do something right. You're supposed to run the ball. You're supposed to block. You're supposed to do something right. But what if he just says, I just don't do anything wrong? And what the guy is saying is, look, master, I didn't do anything wrong. Now, Jesus, of course, is not talking about money. Jesus is talking about whatever you've been given. You have been given certain talents. We can still use that word. And that has been entrusted to you. Now, remember, this is not something that is yours. You have been entrusted with them. Now, did you catch the first reading? In the first reading, you get a good wife is, and then you get X, Y, Z. And at first you're going, why did the church put the whole thing about a good wife in the first reading? And you know why? Because the whole first reading was about a person being productive. If you notice, that's the whole point of that first reading, that she is productive. She takes initiative. She does what she needs to do, and she does it right. And that's what the master expected the servant to do. So now, what does this have to do with First Communion? A lot. You see, a lot of times what happens is this, that we kind of have this idea that receiving First Communion is a matter of what's called piety, meaning, oh, I gotta go receive Jesus. Oh, Jesus. And then I go back to my seat and I go, okay, now I can go back to normal life. Right? Because I was so holy when I received Jesus. But now I go back to my normal life. And then maybe next Sunday I'll go back and receive Jesus again. And I'll go right back and I'll go, I'll get it. And then I'll go back to my seat and go, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Amen. Now I get to do whatever I want. Okay? I hate to tell you, that's not it. That's not it. I want you to go back in your head. I want you to think about this. The word communion. Think about where that word comes from. Super easy. Super easy. You know where the word comes from? Common union. Common union. Let me ask you. Do you live with your parents? Yes, you. Yes, you. Te sacaste la lotería, chica. Do you live with your parents? Okay. Do your parents, because you're very pretty, okay? I am. You're very pretty. Do your parents, what's your first name? Gabriela, my aunt's name. Okay, Gabriela. Do your parents say, Gabriela, you are so pretty, you don't have to do any chores. All you have to do is look pretty. And you can just sit there and go, no? You have to do chores. And what happens if you don't do chores? Say that again.
Grounded.
You're grounded. I love that. Okay. You get grounded. Now, notice, when you live with your parents, you are living in, now listen, you're living in common union with your parents. You're living in communion with your parents. Get it? You're about to receive Jesus in common union. You're about to receive Jesus in communion. When you're living as part of a family, are you expected to just sit there and look pretty? No. Neither when you are in common union with Jesus. It is, what Jesus is saying is, look, it's not enough for you to receive. All the guys did. But what didn't the last guy do? He did nothing. He did absolutely nothing. Notice, he didn't do anything wrong. The problem is, he didn't do anything right. And when you and I are called finally to our final judgment, what Jesus is going to say is, I gave you time, and I gave you energy, and I gave you your talents. What'd you do with them? How is it that you can justify that you spent your time in this world? Is the world better? Is the world better for you having been there? And you better not say, I don't know. I was watching the Astros. I mean, as fun as that was, God really doesn't care about the Astros. I know some of you may be insulted, but that's the truth. The question is, what are you going to do? And so today, you guys are going to start formally living in common union with Jesus. And in the same way that it is not acceptable for you to live in common union with your family and just sit there and do nothing, you are expected to bear fruit in common union with Jesus. He loves you, but he doesn't tolerate laziness. He doesn't tolerate it. And so it's good to receive communion and go back and just pray to Jesus. But don't you dare go back to normal life and forget about him, because you are expected to do your chores. And your chores are in the city of God, your neighbors, and your home. You're expected to be a better person. Okay? Todo está bien. See, that's how you say it in Cuban. Okay. See, look. In normal Spanish, you say, todo está bien. Right? Right. I'm Cuban. Okay? Now, in Cuba, you don't say todo. You say todo. Okay? We sort of save words. Okay? Todo. And then, instead of saying está, we say ta. Okay? So it's todo está bien. Pretty good, huh? Okay. See, you didn't know part of going to communion, it means you have to learn Cuban Spanish. Nah, I'm just teasing.